Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Kevin Combs, Vice President here at McKinney Flavelle. Today is April 1st, 2021, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Today, I'm filling in for Mike Coughlin, emceeing this podcast. And fortunately, make sure we keep this good. I've got Vice President of Information Services, Nicole Thomas. Hello, Nicole.
Hey, Kevin. Also known as the Grim Reaper of grain markets.
You're doing a great job with that. And also, as you guys can hear, I have Eric Thornton, our newest, latest, and greatest sales team member and commodity specialist. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Nicole.
Hey, hey.
Great. Great to have you guys here to join me. And had a little bit of information yesterday come out that certainly rocked the markets.
Ooh.
Woo. And it had a severe impact. So, Nicole, how about those grain acreage numbers? What'd you think? What happened? And where do we go from here?
It's all my fault, Kevin. Yeah. Caused derechos and misguesses on stocks numbers and acreage numbers and all that stuff. So the bottom line is
Nicole, be careful here. I really think you're asking for death threats to come your way.
Yeah. I'm joking. If you haven't picked up on my wry sense of humor yet, because I have to find humor and traumatic experiences. Bottom line is the numbers came out well below analyst expectations. And frankly, you know, everything that the market had been looking at, you know, running the numbers for what the balance sheet might indicate, you know, strongly indicated for everyone that we're going to see this sharp increase in soybean acres and in corn. Corn's miss was a little less severe. You know, the market was hoping for, you know, at least, if not more, 92 million acres to at least kind of keep things consistent with ending stocks year to year, particularly if we get, you know, this post-pandemic ramp up in demand that everyone seems to be expecting. What we got instead was 91.1 million acres. Relatively modest increase from 2020. And keep in mind that the 2020 planted acreage came under pressure. And if you've been following these markets for a while, you'll remember last year, this time, we thought we were going to get, what was it, 97 million acres of corn?
97.
Some ridiculously high number. Well, you know, this go round, farmers seem to be a little more hesitant to throw out a large number. So, and interestingly, what we saw was two of the largest production states, Illinois and Iowa, are both anticipating acreage to fall by 400,000 acres each.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, with the exception of a sharp increase for South Dakota, which has some planting issues last year, overall, the sentiment was lower. Now, you know, to a degree, that part we expected. As it relates to soybeans and needs there. But that's where things got really interesting.
I really think, you know, we need to hear from Illinois and Iowa. What is up?
Yes.
What is up with that? Help us out here. We need some help.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they're going to make up for it with stupendous yields, you know? Yeah, I don't even know if I want to talk about weather because that's a whole other call,
I think.
That might be a bit ominous as well. So, you know. But with soybeans, we saw 87.6 million is what came out of the report. And like I mentioned, market was expecting at least 90 million with many believing that it would be even higher yet. So sharply under expectations. And this was even with, you know, some notable increases. I mean, we saw on the report that North Dakota is actually expecting to expand its soybean acreage by 1.25 million acres. That's up 22% from last year. Again, considering, you know, the weather scenario and some of the planting issues last year. And other noteworthy, you know, increases, 750,000 more acres for South Dakota. That's where Illinois is shifting that 400,000 acres that they're not directing towards corn. Similar increases for Indiana and Minnesota, and Nebraska even coming in with another 300,000 acres. So, you know, sharp increase is just not enough. And where that, you know, gets scary is starting to look forward at the 2021-22 balance sheet. But before I get into that, we also got the grain stocks report. And of course, you know, just the way demand has unfolded thus far this marketing year, those numbers fell more in line with expectation. So corn stocks in at 7.7 billion. That's down 3% from last year. Interestingly, 52% of those stocks are still in the hands of farmers. And, you know, depending on how much pre-selling they've done of that grain, that could be impactful for basis down the road as processors and millers try to get those stocks out of their hands.
Are you saying there's hope for better basis numbers, Nicole?
From whose perspective?
Good question. From
there's always a winner and loser in any situation.
Let's look at it from the users buying ingredients from manufacturers and processors.
Yeah, well, let's just put it this way. There's this sort of highlights why these basis values are looking as strong as they are for second quarter and into third quarter of this year. If we can get that movement, you know, no later than towards the end of second quarter, then that should help us with those August and September bids that are, you know, those basis values are
pretty scary,
are way up there. Yeah, exactly. scary is an understatement. So it all comes down to when that movement takes place. And, you know, looking at the soybean side of things, you had stocks at 1.56 billion bushels. That's down 31% from last year. Again, no surprise for anyone. We've seen a phenomenal crush pace. I think we only have October through February numbers at this moment for NOPA crush, and they're almost at a billion bushels for that time frame. And NOPA, you know, is most of what's crushed, but there's a little more on top of that too from non-NOPA members. But the interesting thing there is when you look at on-farm stocks for soybeans, only 38% is still in the hands of farmers. So it looks like farmers made the decision, let's move more of the beans into the market now, and let's hold on to the corn and try to get better values. And, you know, considering where basis, or at least offers for farmers have been kind of hovering, I could see where, you know, they would see the opportunity down the road for some basis appreciation and make them, you know, want to hold out for a little while to sell that. Whereas bean and just the futures alone and how they've rallied probably say, yeah, well, let's just get that in the market before something changes. The thing for folks to really start thinking about is the balance sheet for the upcoming year. And if you want to know, you know, along with the acreage numbers, why the market got so excited about this report yesterday, it's because when you start running the numbers for 21-22, you find yourself in a scenario where for corn, we're going to need at least to offset potential increase in demand from the ethanol category, we're going to need some pressure on feed and residual prices and on exports. Both to a degree are plausible, because if these feed prices stay high, you could certainly see some feed rationing, a little pullback on production from the livestock sector. Also very much dependent on what that export demand picture is telling them. And then from, you know, corn exports, that one's, you know, that's kind of the harder one to gauge. If this Safrina crop endures some trouble, then we could see these our export, the U.S. export category, stay pretty strong, and we not get that pressure we need. Because as it stands today, even with a drop in both of those categories, we could still be looking at ending stocks sitting somewhere around 1.9 billion bushels, and that 2 billion bushel mark is kind of a psychological level. and that gets you close to 13% stocks to use ratio, which also kind of hovers on that, you know, neutral to possibly bullish if we get some strengthening there. And then for the beans, I mean, every time we do a podcast, my heart goes out to soybean oil users or edible oil users of any sort at this point, because we would have to, you know, considering if we just left the balance sheet where it is today for the current marketing year, and we came into 21-22 with 120 million bushels, we get an increase on crush, which is plausible, again, based on, you know, some of these demand factors, including the oil stuff that, you know, we'll discuss later this month at the seminar. Or we don't get enough pressure on exports, then we could very well find ourselves going into 21-22, you know, barely above 100 million bushels. If I wanted to be, you know, optimistic about it, you know, 120 to 130 million. And if you talk to people in the field, they're very uncertain about that 120 million for this year. So we're going to see some imports. We might even see some imports of end products too, to kind of try to get us through this crop year into the next. So all I can say is, let's hope this dryness that's going to be beneficial for plantings kind of turns around by the time those seeds get in the ground, and certainly by the time we get to the pollination period for both of these crops. Because we're going to need, you know, a bin buster if we maintain this acreage. And worth mentioning, as far as that's concerned, the combined acreage for corn and beans was about a little under 4.5 million acres below what is expected. And if you look at historical reports between the March prospective plantings and the acreage report at the end of June, going back, you know, some years, you can see those corn numbers come up a couple million acres. You can see those bean acres come up a little bit as well. So I wouldn't say what we're looking at right now is set in stone, but it just means things are going to be volatile for another few months. We didn't get that relief out of these reports that we were hoping for.
Well, we certainly saw a lot of volatility last year with reports on what we thought was going to get planted and that didn't. And so hopefully this year just reverses that course and we see more acres planted.
Right.
One of the other numbers that caught my interest was we had total acres planted was up, I think, over 6 million acres, if I remember right. And yet it obviously didn't catch the corn growers and soybean growers' attention. It went to other products, which kind of leads me to you, Eric. Because I think we're expecting a little bit different numbers on the all wheat acres than what we got. So tell us what you got there on wheat.
Yeah, I think when scrolling through quickly on the release yesterday, looking at corn and soy, I'm like, man, where's the acres? And then I look down at wheat and I'm like, oh, okay. Well, there's a surprise as well with wheat acres actually seeing an increase when, you know, most of the sentiment was we'd see a pretty heavy hit towards spring wheat acres, kind of bringing us somewhere around 49.5 to maybe 45 million acres planted. But numbers came out and we're seeing that we'll be expected to plant 46.4 million acres. So up just over 2 million planted acres from last year. So the optimism is a little bit brighter here for wheat, but as I had wrote in the IQ post yesterday, it's sort of a double-edged sword or a gift and a curse, whichever, you know, phrase you'd like to use, that, you know, while we did get some extra acres and it's nice, it's, you know, kind of came at the detriment to corn and soy and running, you know, potentially those markets to ending stock levels that are going to be pretty tight, as Nicole explained, is only going to really help to keep wheat elevated a little bit here in terms of pricing. But kind of getting into the specifics, a lot of the increase came from the winter wheat acres. So we're expected to plant 33.1 million, which is up a pretty sizable 9% from last year at 30.4 million. Hard red winter wheat looking at 23.2, while your soft red winter is 6.4 million acres. So a lot of that coming by way of Kansas and Texas. Saw some pretty good acreage increases there. Texas is up 600,000 acres to now 5.5 million. Kansas is up 700,000 planted acres 7.3 million. So again, that's where a lot of the increase is being attributed to in the winter wheat acres. But spring wheat acres were expected to come down, and they did, but they were pretty much in line with expectations. So we're coming down to 11.7 million acres for spring wheat against 12.25 million planted last year. So certainly a lot more winter wheat acres than anticipated, and even what was indicated in some of the seedling reports late last year and early this year. You know, with the recent rainfall coming in March and the improved weather, the optimism and the crop potential has is more promising now than what it was just a month ago. So we saw a lot of that come out of the market in terms of some pre-report sell-off the last 2 weeks. And Kansas City wheat in particular came down nearly a dollar per bushel leading up to the report. And, you know, that was going to be definitely a moment to get in and extend yourselves through second half. And I believe a lot of users were doing that. And, you know, definitely a bearish report for wheat. But again, what happened with corn and soy ultimately kind of pulled wheat up with it yesterday. I think we were up 14 to 20 cents across all three contracts as corn traded limit up yesterday. And today, I think we're seeing more of a reaction to the actual numbers for wheat, and we're down somewhere around 10 cents or so on the Chicago wheat contract. So seeing a little bit of relief come out, but you know, to Nicole's point about volatility and entering into the weather market here, expect some pretty turbulent pricing and potential scenarios, but ultimately wheat looks a little bit better than it did prior to yesterday. And, you know, we should see production reach a number that is larger than last year, but the wild cards will be how much will we see in terms of exports again, and then also looking towards how much wheat for feed demand we see. And with obviously corn and soy being much tighter in those arenas, there could be some additional rationing for wheat for feed. So ending stocks could still struggle to maintain current levels at 836 million bushels, but nonetheless, not as grim as potentially feared prior to the report. So, you know, early estimates right now and factoring in some other assumptions should see ending stocks come in above 700 million bushels, as long as we have somewhere near a 49 bushel per acre yield. That's kind of where we're seeing things here on the early end, but obviously a long way to go. A lot of weather and a lot of days ahead of us here. So that's what I saw in wheat to this point.
Hey, well, first off, Eric, I thought one more thing on your comment, whether it's a curse or the sword. If I have to take one or the other, I think I'm going to take the sword. I want to see what's coming versus a curse, which I might not see.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one.
Yes. Come on, Kevin, give us some good news on sugar, man.
But so sugar was, obviously, when we talk about sugar beets, when we talk about planting with cane being a ratoon crop, we don't get that in the planting intentions report. We do get the acreage numbers with the final acreage report. So when you looked at sugar, though, we had additional 6,800 acres planted this year, which is just a hair above our expectations. We're kind of thinking 5,000 to 6,000 acres would be planted. There was a little bit of a surprise, though, because the Red River Valley was up 10,000 acres. And so we ended up losing some acreage in the plains. And then also out further west, you know, when you get into Idaho, Oregon, and Washington, we thought they'd be up a little bit stronger. But they came in just up a little bit. So good news, bad news there, depending on which area of the country you're in. And if you've got a different supplier on sugar other than Red River Valley, they could be looking at a little less acreage. So all in all, again, not a big surprise. You know, sugar prices are good. It's attracting additional acreage for the co-ops. And it'll just have to wait and see here. And hopefully they all get planted on time. But, you know, this time of year, this is the first year where it's like, wow. Pretty much across all the co-ops, they should be looking at, they've either been planting for a couple of weeks or will start planting now. And in even the Red River Valley, you know, expect to see that very soon. And that's early to normal, or early to normal, instead of, you know, having to fight off weather floods, etc. So knock, knock. Let's hope the weather holds and we're able to get all the beets in the ground quickly.
Don't jinx us, Kevin, because I am to corn and soybean prices, apparently, what you are to weather and sugar beet production.
Yes. And anybody who saw our recap on the IQ portal will notice I'm very, very careful. And I will not put anything down in the closing of that article to suggest that there could be something huge coming unless something negative were to happen. Because after I wrote that, something mm-hmm. negative did happen. So no more. It will not happen.
Almost as bad as Mike's football predictions, or any sport for that matter.
This is very true.
So, hey, my March Madness pick's still in it, Gonzaga. So,
oh, way to go out on a limb there, Eric.
Hey, he is the winner of our football pool.
I think the odds were like 1 to 10 versus the field for Gonzaga this year.
Yeah, it was pretty easy to pick them, but hey,
it's not
still
done
some
yet.
Good teams left.
It's not done yet. Exactly. So I guess we know Eric's pick is Gonzaga. Nicole, do you have a dark horse there?
I don't even know who's in it this go round. You want to know what my March Madness has been? Soybean oil market.
Exactly.
That's my March Madness. I couldn't
tell. That is great March Madness.
And it could be April Madness. And
May
Madness.
Yeah.
And June Madness.
Exactly.
I love college basketball. I look forward to watching the Final Four games upcoming. And I have to agree with Eric. I would have picked Gonzaga like everybody else in a heartbeat because they got generally good players have been sticking around for multiple years. And this year, you know, my team, I always root for University of Kentucky, being that my father was from Kentucky, and they didn't even make the tournament. And then not only did they not make the tournament this year, Duke did not make the tournament this
year.
What? When you take two perennial power,
UNC
like
didn't make
that,
it.
What?
University of North Carolina didn't make it.
No.
So yeah, when you take a look at just how jumbled it is, and you look at what's going on, and just how successful the Gonzaga program is, they always have a good mix. They got some older players that have been around for a while, and some strong younger players. So great pick, and I think Eric's right.
We will see.
I think Kevin really likes college basketball.
This is the case.
He's thought about it. He could analyze that market as well because he's on it. He's passionate. He's passionate.
Got to get him on ESPN or something.
I know,
a
right?
Prediction. ESPN podcast.
And I must say, I'm not as fanatical as I should be because I watched very little of Kentucky this year. I guess getting too frustrated.
Well, it's like the markets, man. You can't love it. You can't have a vested interest in it. You got to be able to look at it from an unbiased eye.
That's right.
There you go. We'll work on it. But great recap, guys. Thank you for your comments. And just want to remind everyone out there, thank you to all our listeners. We appreciate your continued following of our podcast. And we just want to remind you about some upcoming things at McKinney Favelle. We got something big coming up on April 27th and 28th.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to be conducting our online spring seminar. Sorry, Chicago. We couldn't make it this year, but hopefully we get to see you again next year. Please check out our webpage as far as information on signing up for that. And in the meantime, that wraps up this hot commodity podcast. Want to thank everyone. And as Mike always says, live with an attitude of gratitude. Until next time, take care.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.